Good morning and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Larry Kay from Chicago, and I will be the host for the presentation this morning. Today is Sunday, March 16th, 2025. Let me give you the share ID numbers for Friday, March 14th. The 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting, that number is 22,252. That's 22252. For the 10 a.m. meeting, on Friday, 22,253. That's 22253. This morning, A Vision for You presents a wholesale miracle. Our speaker this morning, she's going to share her personal story of transformation, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So looking forward to that. You know, it might sound counterintuitive, to get somewhere by letting go. However, our personal experience in working these 12 steps and practicing these principles to the best of our ability, it suggests that surrender is the surest route to a spiritual awakening. But, you know, how do you do that? And for me, recovery through the 12 steps is all about releasing oneself from the unnecessary constraints of the ego, not the elimination of the ego. That certainly isn't possible. We're created that way. Yet every aspect of the 12-step journey is really a counterweight to selfish preoccupation. It's a counterweight to the selfish preoccupation. That's the ego that I speak of. And we don't leapfrog over the ego's needs or demands. No, we can't do that. Rather, we learn to hold them with a lighter, more forgiving touch. And what happens is the desire to compulsively engage in our addiction gets quiet. The obsession is eradicated. And the practical program of spiritual action works for the cynic. There's one or two on the line. The pragmatist, they're here. The religionist, the atheist. It works for any age or cultural background. It works for the spiritual person, but it also works for the non-spiritual person alike. I've seen you. I've met you. And the action suggested as a program of recovery will automatically start bringing you to the experience of freedom. And here's something else. It's okay to be skeptical. We've been taken down the primrose path before. So to be skeptical, you know, as much as you like, you know, that's fine. Indeed, it's probably advisable to avoid gushing enthusiasm. But what's being offered to the still sick and suffering compulsive overeater is not something that has to be acquired. It's not something new or outside your capacity to tap into. It actually really is already yours. And it merely has to be reawakened. It has to be rediscovered. Recovery, it seems to me, in my experience, will emerge of its own nature. You know, remember what was said said in the big book. Here are the steps we took as a program of recovery. There's no possibility of liberation without understanding three essential things. We have to understand the problem, the solution to the problem, and how to bring that solution to light. In other words, how that gets manifested. And we have to put down the weapon before complete surrender without conditions. It's an unconditional surrender. Disarmament first, then outer disarmament. And, you know, that's recovery, folks. For you. But it nonetheless is recovery for many fellows who subject themselves to an active process of transformation. And, you know, perhaps you've seen that the more you pull on the rope to hitch yourself up to where you want to be, the more frazzled and frayed the rope becomes. And you might be wondering, isn't there an easier, better way? And there's got to be a catch. It's too good to be true. You know, are you willing to let go of the rope? Because we have a roadmap. In our text, it lays out the pragmatics of the inner process of transformation that's been experienced by so many. And they're not difficult to understand, not difficult to implement. The major requirement is willingness to let go of attachment to your current experience of life in this disease. We have to have that willingness. And the tradition of sharing what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now in the rooms has its roots in the foundational principles of the fellowship, this method of storytelling. We're going to hear a story this morning as we hear. And, you know, this is what we need to hear. Paradoxically, we don't chase recovery. Rather, in working the steps, we allow recovery to find us. A spiritual transformation requires a yielding, not a reaching. It's a yielding. And self-preoccupation gives way to something much more valuable. And the ego is not eliminated in the same way that sometimes, you know, rough waves of the ocean are not eliminated. They're merely part of the whole. But working the 12 steps we channel into something that we do not have exact words for. Bill talked about a psychic change, a spiritual awakening, a personality shift, a spiritual experience. It all means the same thing, really, a change. And this golden state we call recovered, it's miraculous. It's a gift from God. Yet armed with a healthy respect for the disease, we recognize the recovered state of being can evaporate when we stop doing the things which led to a personal relationship with power. Now, you're going to hear someone's testimony. And personally, I love learning about how someone experiences freedom. And I'll tell you something. If her testimony helps sweep away prejudice, if it enables you to think honestly, encourages you to search diligently within yourself, then, if you wish, you can join us on the broad highway. Because with this attitude, you cannot fail. The consciousness of your belief is sure to come to you. Now, joining us this morning to share her personal story of transformation as a result of the 12 steps is Becca R. And Becca is a recovered compulsive overeater from Kentucky. She is dedicated to our 12-step way of life, and she's committed to carrying a message of hope to our fellowship. And it's with just an abundance of appreciation that we welcome Becca to the line this morning. Good morning, Becca.
Good morning. Thank you for the introduction, Larry. That was really nice. I am Becca R. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater, anorexic, and bulimic. And I live in Kentucky. I'm just going to start with the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. I'm totally nervous. I gave my sponsor a call about 10 minutes ago and tried to get rid of some of it, but I think you guys might have a little bit of the shaky voice of my nerves. I think as I progress in my talk, it'll calm down some, as it usually does. But yeah, when Leah reached out to me about sharing on a special edition, I was immediately taken back to when I first discovered the podcast of OA speakers. And for me, it was the first time I heard people talking about the secrets that I had done, that I had with food. And there was nothing more comforting than hearing that I wasn't alone, that there were other people out in the world that suffered from this obsession with food and body and weight. And so as much as I want to give you guys an amazing presentation on some fascinating topic, what you get is my story of transformation. And like Larry said, I hope it can resonate with you. I've been part of a mom's group in recovery, and we have a meeting, and we just started the big book, started with the preface. And when we got to the forward to the second edition, it was just last week, the word "a wholesale miracle" really stuck out to me. And when Bill was writing the foreword to the second edition, 16 years had passed since Alcoholics Anonymous had started. And what they hoped for was like to break even on this investment they had to produce the books, to mail out the books, and to, you know, somehow plant the seeds of recovery. And the miracle that happened in those 16 years was bigger than they could have ever expected. I don't know about you guys, but I think of wholesale as like Costco and Sam's and buying things in large quantities. And a miracle is a miracle, no matter how big or how small. So just that emphasis on this wholesale miracle, bigger than they could have imagined. And that really resonated with me, because that's what I feel like with my recovery, that I've been granted this, not just a miracle, but it's bigger than I could have ever imagined. The way recovery has waved through every single aspect of my life. All I wanted to do was to be thin and to not obsess about food. And if I had settled for that, I would have so shortchanged myself, because I believe my experience of working the steps and working the steps that and still currently working has what's given me this experience that is a wholesale miracle. So yeah, I'm give you a few demographics. I'm 41. I live in Kentucky. I'm a mom of three kids. And I came to program 8 years ago after my oldest stuck her tiny little fingers, I think she was two, under the door jamb of the bathroom while I was throwing up. And it was like those shades that if you pull them down, they pop up. This thought of, what the heck are you doing, Becca? You've got to do something. You can't keep living like this. And so that was one of my moments of clarity in program. And I remember going to my husband. We had not been married long, and kind of coming clean, like telling him what I was doing. I was throwing up several times a day at this point. Very isolated. Felt very conflicted spiritually, and we decided to seek some professional help. I do want to just share that I've been in 12-step programs. It'll be 25 years this year. So when I said the spiritual conflict, it really was hard to feel spiritual when my head was in a toilet multiple times a day, when I was buying and consuming just gross amounts of food. And yeah, it was very conflicting. I don't know if you've ever felt like you were living a double life, but I sure did feel like I was living a double life. And so what it was like for me, I grew up feeling different. I'm the third of four kids, girl, boy, girl, boy. And I can remember my older siblings being thin, skinny kids, and just as early as three or four or five, remembering, noticing that I was different in size in the way we presented. School age, I can remember becoming fixated on pinching parts of my body, specifically around my knees, under my upper arms, and in my belly. I would spend lots of time in front of mirrors, sometimes picking at my face or manicuring. myself. I can also remember being maybe 10 and receiving, or not receiving, but looking at these teen magazines, and in the back there would always be these ads for these magic remedies for weight loss. And I can remember spending so much time reading those 2 pages of ads. I couldn't tell you what I read in the magazine, but I can remember just scouring over ad after ad of magic diet pill that was going to change my life, and and thinking then, like, how can I get this? I was 10. I was an anxious child, and our literature and more about alcoholism, I always just relate so much to the story of the guy, I think it was Jim, but I think the book says he had a nervous disposition. And I mean, that hits me because I grew up with this nervous disposition. And when I discovered food, that was like the treatment I'd been seeking. With the 4 children my parents raised, I was the one that led them to their first pediatric psych eval. Again, it was that nervous disposition. I would ruminate and become so afraid. And I got really dependent on ritual. This was like young adolescence, like 11 or 12. And I remember my parents going to the psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist said, you don't need to come back. Here's what you're going to do. And it was essentially behavior modification. One of my rituals, I had many, but one was just fearful of going to sleep. And there was this whole ritual of how the lights had to be, my mom had to be in this place. Anyway, and slowly with this behavior modification, each night my mom moved in a chair and got further and further from the door. And I overcame this compulsion, this obsession with routine. And I say that because this is the same thing I saw it when I was struggling with food. There are some areas where self-will had worked. Another example was in middle school. I was an athlete, and seventh grade year, I remember not making my desired team and feeling really devastated, but then using that energy and determination to spend all of that seventh grade year preparing, getting ready for that eighth grade year tryout, and making the team. And again, I'm just showing you these examples of where self-will, determination worked for me. Sadly, they did not work when it came to the food. But it is understandable for me to see that, of course, I would try all these things. They had worked in the past. Just pull yourself up. Get some grit, Becca. Just hunker down and do it. I began eating compulsively as early as I can remember. I can remember stealing money from my grandfather's wallet to walk across the street to this little deli and buying candy bars. And I remember my grandfather asking me if I took some money out of his wallet. And I just looked at him straight in the eye and said, no. And he knew. And he said, Becca, I know you took money out of my wallet. And I just could not admit it. And that was the delusion that I would live in for many, many years, of not being able to see how this disease was just taking over my life. Fast forward into my young adulthood, I got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous as a teenager, thank you God, And that's when I really noticed my infatuation with food and sweets particularly really started. The place I spent a lot of time in meetings, there was a designated candy person. Like her service position was to make sure those little baskets were filled with candy. And there was a lot of eating around the social part of my relationships at that time. I was in college for many, many years, about 7 or 8. And a lot of eating in that time as well. And in college, I began to restrict and start the cycle of dieting. My cycle looked a lot like this. I would wake up and say, today's the day. I'm going to eat better. I'm going to stick to the diet, whatever the diet is. And for some amount of time, it could be 12 hours, it could be 12 days, I would stick to it. But eventually, I was going to fall prey to that old belief that the book talks about. I would see other people around me eating, and I would think, I can do this too. And I would end up in a binge, and to wake up with that horror, bewilderment, frustration, self-loathing. And I would say, it's going to start today. Today's the day. And that cycle just continued to get shorter and shorter and shorter. Trying lots of methods to control my weight and my food. I became a mom and a wife within a couple of years of meeting my husband. And there wasn't anything I wanted to do more than to be a mom and a wife. And my food and my eating and my obsession with exercise stole a lot of time from my family in those early years. I would blame it on... Or rather, my excuse would be, the gym offers free childcare, so I need to optimize every bit of that childcare. It's free. And I was going to the gym 2 hours a day. And then there was this new type of exercise that came around, and they had a very early morning class. And so I started getting up and going to this early morning class, seeing my husband off to work, going to the gym for 2 hours, coming home, putting my baby down for a nap. And then usually the evenings would come. And I don't know about you guys, but that was my time. Once the baby was asleep, once the husband was settled in, I just kept going back to the kitchen. It would always start so benign, a little bit of this, a scrape of that, a taste of this. But what I've learned in the doctor's opinion about that addiction, that allergic reaction would start. And it's like once those floodgates opened up, I couldn't stop. And I would be prey to this idea of I've screwed up. I might as well go good and hard and start again tomorrow. And I can't tell you how many times that happened. Some nights I would end it with throwing up. And some nights towards the end of my disease, I had a really hard time throwing up. And so I started using laxatives and diuretics. I was a slave to the scale, like many of us are. Weighing myself multiple times a day. And then the number was never right. Like, I don't know what the right number was, but it was never right. And yeah. And so then to the day my daughter put her little fingers under the bathroom door jamb and asked what I was doing. That's when I decided to seek help. And so I was introduced to like professional recovery. And I had a great therapist who was pretty renowned in the field of eating disorders for our area, much like Dr. Silkworth was renowned in the field of alcoholism. But she really promoted this behavior modification model of recovery. And she would encourage me to buy these mini-sized candy bars and just have this number a day, or and it just never worked. And I can remember going to her after spending a week away in it's a foreign country, I can't think of, Antigua, a week away in Antigua, and going to a session with her and admitting, you know, oh, I had a bit of a slip. And she was asking to describe the slip. Well, it was an all-inclusive resort, so, you know, I overate a lot. I binged and purged a lot. And she started asking about, she knew that my gag reflex had diminished, and she asked how I would describe it, and I was telling her that I was using a toothbrush to put down my throat to initiate the gag reflex because it had become so weak. And her mouth just dropped. And in my mind, it was like, this is just this little thing I'm doing with food. And she said, so you're telling me you were in basically a third world country, and you were throwing up multiple times a day with an object. And I'm a nurse. She knew that I was a nurse. And she said, have you ever heard of an esophageal hemorrhage? And I was like, oh, yeah, it's a medical emergency. And she, again, it was like those shades had been ripped up. And I got to see that this wasn't this little thing I was doing with food. This was my very life I was playing roulette with. And that's when I began to take this program serious. And that's when I began to see that she was not going to be the answer. I believed in the steps. I'd heard of a way. Back to my beginning of the talk, you know, I started investigating Overeaters Anonymous. This is pre-COVID. So I'm sure there were online meetings, but what I found were these speaker meetings out of the West Coast, a couple different solid meetings, light a candle, and there's maybe it's called the kitchen sink, I don't remember, but you know, OA originated in the West Coast, so it seems like it's a lot stronger out there. And anyway, I started listening to these podcasts, and I would hear people share about doing those same things that I was doing with food. And I started to have some hope. And I started going to meetings. They were not in the town I lived in. They were about an hour away. I couldn't go frequently, but I went when I could. I was making maybe one to two meetings a week. And I remember there being a lot of literature, feeling very overwhelmed, seeing people of all different sizes, and I could definitely relate to the talk, to like the identifying in. They were talking about what they did with food, and yes, I could relate. I did it too. I didn't hear the solution in those meetings, but I'm so grateful to have gone because my Ebby was a result of one of those meetings. And it was after a We Care list where we go around and put our phone numbers for other members to reach out by phone or text. And someone and made a call to me, and she was in that meeting, and she shared with me about this approach that with the big book. And like I said before, I'd seen lots of literature in my face-to-face OA meeting. And I was like, oh, what book do I get? Where do I start? When she mentioned the big book, I was like, well, I've already got that one. And she wanted to share with me a few podcasts on entire abstinence. And I remember listening and just thinking, like, I've tried everything, but I've never tried this surrender, this complete surrender. And so I called her back and asked her if she would sponsor me. And she said, sure. And she took me through the steps exactly as she was taken. And I found recovery and abstinence. And I experienced a wholesale miracle. Within the first few weeks, I became free from the obsession. I found a food plan that I surrendered to God, and God helped me stick to that food plan for a month. We would get information at the end of the month and adjust it as needed. I did end up working with a nutritionist as part of my recovery, but my weight fell. And the biggest thing was that my mind calmed down. My mind settled. I began attending meetings regularly. This is my home group, A Vision for You. I'm on Central Time here in Kentucky. I'm in Western Kentucky, so I do tend to do the 10 a.m. Eastern meeting is where you'll find me doing service. But I began listening. And I would call in every day, and I would listen to the recordings, and I would devour the special editions. And I went to the website and became a member and had access to all these recovered people. And it mushroomed. It was a wholesale miracle. I found my people. I found my tribe, and I found recovery. As soon as I finished my steps, I began sponsoring, and my relapse after a few years was after a pregnancy. And, you know, it wasn't so much a relapse with, like, going back to full, you know, there was no toothbrush involved. It wasn't to that extent, which I thought that's what a relapse would be, but this disease is sneaky, and it became quantity, and so it just got real messy again, and I'm happy to share more about that outside of the meeting. But I knew when I got quiet and felt my higher power, I knew it was time to come back to do the work. I hadn't left, but I can say my service was, I was not doing service. I wasn't sponsoring actively. I was listening to meetings when it was convenient to call in and listen to a recording. But it was, I felt very much like the man in More About Alcoholism who is like, has that white knuckle sobriety. Like he's just holding on. He's not drinking. And I think he does it for 25 years. And I was able to do that for a period of time. But what happened is I have this family that I prayed for, these children that were just everything I ever wanted in life. And I was miserable. And I hated my life. And I hated myself. And everything felt hard. And I knew deep down inside that I was back in the food, and that conduit that had been opened to my higher power through working the steps previously was clouded. And so, again, that shade ripped open, and it's like, Becca, just say it. You're in relapse. And I did. And I got a sponsor. At first, I talked to my sponsor. I'd never left OA. I was still in OA. I spoke with my sponsor, and I said, you know, I need a new experience. And with that, I found another sponsor. And I really feel like God is in sponsorship. And if I do feel like God put my sponsor in my life, just as he's put my sponsees in my life. And I found another woman who had children, and she was on summer break from being a teacher, and I was on summer break with three kids. The youngest was one. And she said, let's get through these steps. The recovery is at step 12. Let's get you through the steps. And I thought, this is a terrible time. How are we going to do this? But again, like God did for me what I couldn't do for myself. And inch by inch, day by day, one step at a time, we got through those steps, I'd say, in about 4 months. And it was a new experience. We did the steps different, which I love that about this program, that there's so many different avenues to God through the steps. And I had a new experience. And I just, this is one of my favorite parts of my story, is that after all this experience, I came to my sponsor and I said, okay, I think I'm going to start an OA meeting. That's going to be my 12th step work. And I was just convinced that she was going to just applaud for me. Oh, yeah, Becca, that's a great idea. And she did think it was a great idea, but she said, you still have to sponsor. I was really afraid of that time. I mean, I had three kids at home. I was busy. Where am I going to have time? And my schedule's so busy. What if their schedule's busy? And she reminded me, it was agreed upon in the beginning that you would do anything to stay abstinent or recovered. And this is it. This is step 12. And so I'm so grateful for that. I'm so grateful that she pressed into me the service of sponsoring, because that's where my recovery blossomed in a way it had never been before. This was April 1st of 2022. And so the last 3 years I've been working with this sponsor. I've been sponsoring. I just finished, I have a sponsee who just finished her steps yesterday, and I'm eager to find someone new, which is crazy because my experience before, I was just so terrified of the time and the commitment. And what I've found is that God just gives the time. God carves out these little pockets of time, and sponsoring's given me so much opportunity to practice these character defects that I've been praying to have removed. God is amazing at giving me opportunities to practice that, setting boundaries, saying what I can and what I can't do. And it has been a delight. My life is so good today. I mean, it's hard to even put into words, but it is so much more than the food. I want to say I've been in a normal sized body for the last 3 years. My weight has not changed more than 5 pounds. I'm not a slave to the scale. Some of the tools in my toolbox is that I use a weighed and measured food plan. I commit my food the night before to my sponsor. I share a nightly review with my sponsor. For the last couple of years, I've been on a 10-step train. And that just blows my mind because I was so afraid of committing to do that every single day. And now it's like brushing my teeth. It just comes so easy. And a sponsor, if I have changes, I let my sponsor know. I talk to my sponsor when I travel. I've traveled the world in this state of recovery. I've been to Europe. I've been to Mexico. I've been to El Salvador. And I've been able to maintain my recovery and my support, my abstinence through it all. And just a little shout out, thank God for cell phones and the internet. I just feel so lucky, especially in reading those forewords, to think of like the snail mail waiting for the big book to arrive in the mailbox to get the message of hope. And now I can pick up my little cell phone and guys at any time. All over the world. So, so very grateful. And what it's like today, really happy to share that I have a strong prayer meditation practice right now. It has not always been like that. But my practice is I get up at 5 every day. My house usually wakes up about 6 or 6:15, and so I have that hour to be with my higher power, to be in the literature. I do a lot of reading and writing. I attended the OA birthday party. It was my second birthday party this year, and I loved hearing my fellows talk about that prayer and meditation time and what their practices look like. And that really rocketed me into coming back to, this has been a constant, but coming back to those early morning times. When I miss it in the morning, it's difficult to find the time in the afternoon. And so, yeah, that convention just really lit me up for having that time. And my practices, I journal, I love to write, and I do several different meditation books, and I have a terrible memory, so I like to jot down lines that stick out to me, lines and quotes, or what I hear in a meeting. And then I meditate, and I think about the 24 hours ahead. I think about where my service can be. I think about where I'm going to treat my disease. For me, it's a beautiful treatment of my compulsive overeating to connect with my fellows. And I do try to incorporate calls throughout the day. Some people I'll cold call, like I'll just go to a list, or I've seen them on a meeting, I took down their number, and I'll shoot them a text or give them a call and say, hey, we were on a meeting. And then I've got fellows that have been trudging with me for many years, and I'm so, so grateful for those relationships too, where we've walked with each other for years now. And it's just such a treat to have these relationships in my life. I've had some amazing, amazing experiences in recovery. I think my chameleonness, if that's a word, has really come out. A quick plug for conventions or gathering. As much as I love, love, love our online meetings and our phone meetings, I love the fellowship. I want to touch you guys. I want to be in the same room with you guys. I want to hear your stories. I want to see your faces. I want to see and hear what God's doing for you. And I'm so, so grateful that the last Vision Conference, I think it was 2018 or 19 or 17, I'm not sure, but I remember when I first worked with my first sponsor, she went to that and she was on fire. And I said to myself, I'm going to get abstinent and I'm going to go to that next year. And sure enough, it came around the next year and I went. I didn't know anybody. I knew my sponsor was going, but I got a room. I didn't know anybody. I got a flight. I flew up to New Jersey and I had the time of my life. And I really try to get to gatherings because I like to be with you all. I'm close to the Nashville Inner Group. I've done a couple of retreats there. I've done the OA birthday party and planning on being out in New Jersey this fall. But again, I just love being with you guys. I also want to just say I was so fortunate to find a group of moms when I came into OA. And I mean, we all have our excuses, but one of mine was, this is too hard to do. I've got goldfish around my house. I've got snacks and treats. And it's just too hard. I'm sleep deprived. I'm up in the middle of the night. Being a mom really made it hard for me. It was where a lot of my excuses came. And so what God did for me is he connected me to this group of other moms who were recovered, who were doing this deal and doing it with no sleep, with tiny babies, with teenagers, with like doing it all and staying abstinent. And I just found so much camaraderie there. It's still a really special part of my recovery, and these are the women that I've walked alongside with for years now. But I just like to say that's the fellowship I crave. I've created that. I crave in person, and so I prioritize that. I like to be with you guys. I do feel like service is important for me, so I do service on this meeting. That's what I consider my home meeting. I try to be a good steward of when I'm in meetings to contribute to the seventh tradition. I've just been scratching the surface of the service of OA, the OA General Service, and I want this thing to be around for the generations ahead, and so to do that, it has to stay up and running. And so, I give to my home group a contribution, and I do try to be mindful of when I'm in attendance of other meetings. You know, whether it's Venmo or PayPal or God help me if they want me to send a check, but I do try to do that because that's what keeps our fellowship alive, is to have a headquarters that's making sure that OA is going to be available for the next person who needs it, the next person who came in. Yeah, so I think that's all I have, Larry. What it was like, what happened to me, it's been a wholesale miracle. God is the hero. The steps were my conduit to God. And I was telling my sponsor this morning that it's probably a really good thing I don't like speaking because I feel like my ego would really take off with it. But I'm willing to go to any length today to keep what I have. And when it was asked if I would give this presentation, as much as I did not want to do it, you better believe I'll do it. I'll shout from the mountaintops what this program has done. It has saved my life. It has given my family a wife, a mom, a sister, a daughter. Everything good in my life is a direct result of these steps in my relationship with God. And I thought it was just this little thing with food that I did. And it was so much more. So that's all I have. I'll pass with that. Thanks so much.
Becca, thanks so much. You know, I don't know who your sponsor is. I don't need to know, but I can tell you this. She's beaming. She's got a smile from ear to ear, I can assure you. I want to thank you for your presentation and just your willingness to be vulnerable and share your experiences with us. It really resonated with us, and it takes a lot of courage to open up, and it makes your talk so much more impactful. So thank you for being real and inspiring us this morning. So now we're going to transition to a question and answer period. If you have a question for Becca, get ready. And also hang out because we're going to ask Becca for her contact information at the end of the recorded hour. But before I take some names for questions for Becca, let me give you the share ID for this morning's presentation. So that share ID is 22,255. That's 22255. Now we're going to open it up for questions for Becca. If you have a question for Becca, in questions only, please press star 1 to unmute your phone and give me your first name and last initial. Who's got a question?
Carolyn
Marie.
Carolyn Ann Marie. Who else? I have Carolyn and I have Anna Maria, who I heard. Anybody else?
Michelle C. in California.
Michelle. Who else? You could press star one.
Gloria B.
Two on Gloria.
Dara,
right.
F.
Was that Dara or Sarah?
Dara with the D.
Dara. Gotcha, Dara. Okay, so here's who I heard this first round. Carolyn, Anne-Marie, Michelle, Gloria, and Darren. And we'll catch you on the back end here. But let's start with Carolyn with the question. Good morning, Carolyn.
Good morning, Larry. And Becca, thank you so much for your share. Really incredible. I just wanted to ask you, like, you know, when your daughter stuck her fingers under the bathroom door while you were throwing up, what exactly were you feeling? Because I have a similar situation where I had four kids and I bought syrup of Ipecac, and two of those kids weren't mine. They were here for a play date, and I ate like an entire cake and then took the stuff and threw up, and I was totally unavailable to any of them. So what were you thinking at the time? Hello?
Yeah,
Becca, you might have got... Oh, there you are. There you are.
Can you hear me? Yeah, that's a great question. And I think I shared it. You know, it was just this, such conflict. I had a spiritual practice that I was participating in, and it's like, and then a few hours later, I'm there throwing up. But I guess the biggest thing was my daughter and just knowing how impactful this disease would be on her. I did not have that in my home. My mom was not a compulsive overeater. I didn't see it in my home, yet I was still a compulsive overeater. So that reality of my daughter, who I just prayed for and begged God for, nothing I wanted to do more than be a mom, and then to see that it could affect her. It was affecting her. That's all.
Okay, thanks for the question, Carolyn. Next up with the question is Anne Marie, followed by Michelle. Anne Marie, good morning to you.
Good morning, Larry. Thank you so much. Thank you, Becca. This is Anne Marie M. in South Carolina. My question is almost on the same line with the previous question. So I heard you say that you spent a lot of time, you know, like I did, eating and not paying much attention to your children. I wonder how that has impacted them, if it has, and what is your relationship with them now? Was there any amends that you needed to make, or were they so young that they may not have recognized what you were doing? Excuse me. Thank you.
Oh, that's a great question. And my kids have all been little at my different periods of my recovery. I do have a teenage daughter. She's 14, and she has recently started being curious about why I go to OA. Like I said, I'm living in a recovered normal sized body. She's only known me in this normal sized body, and so she didn't really get it. And then she's begun asking questions, and so we're starting to talk about the other end of compulsive overeating, the anorexia, the binging, the restricting, and it is very in her face with being a teenage girl. So yeah, a lot of prayer, a lot of meditation. And I don't know if there's any other parent or even dog parent or cat parent, but there's this like parental guilt of self-care that I experience. I don't know if you guys have it, but I do. And it's a constant thing I have to talk about and have to speak it out loud, that by me working my program, which does require a lot of time, it gives them the mom that they deserve. Sometimes they don't see that.
they really wanted me to play with them this morning. And so there is a bit of guilt to do the service, but I've tried it the other way of just being mom and not doing service, and it availed me a relapse. So it's a constant balancing act. It looks different every single day, but it gives them the mom that I want to be. And somehow it's such a paradox to me that the time is there when I surrender it to God. Now, if I go in trying to manage the day with plans and designs, it usually ends up failing. But when I can put my palms up and say, God, I don't know how we're going to do all this today, but I know we've done it before, so I'm going to give you the reins and you show me. And it's such a testament to God's power, because the time, the pockets of time just appear. They're just carved out. And I don't know how it works. It doesn't seem like there's enough minutes in the day, but it does when I'm surrendered. I hope that answers your question. Thanks.
Thanks, Anne Marie. Okay, next up with a question is Michelle, followed by Gloria. Good morning, Michelle.
Hi, thank you, Rebecca, so much for your service. It was so nice to meet you at the OA birthday party this year. So actually, my first question was just answered about how to talk to your kids about being in program. So thank you for those tips. The second question I have for you is, I still struggle with getting, I would say, complete and total abstinence. Still about once or twice a week, kind of in that pre-dinner time, I'm still kind of overeating before dinner. And I'm really struggling to get through that pre-dinner time. And I was wondering if you had any advice on how you work with your sponsor, or kind of how to overcome this pre-dinner, pre-eating challenge I have to really get to complete and total abstinence.
Oh, thanks, Michelle. And right back at you. It's been just a delight to meet you guys in person over the years. I just think about the slogans, and the slogan that is most often heard, in my opinion, is keep coming back. We just keep coming back. I am a perfectionist. I want to do it perfect. I want it to look perfect every single day. And the minute it's not perfect, I want to just throw my hands up in the air and say, it's too much. I can't do this. And so God tells me to just keep coming back, keep being honest. I learned that the more I talked about things that were not bringing me esteem, the more I was willing to pray for God to remove those unesteemable acts. And I don't feel good when I'm eating extra food, whether it's abstinent food or something I'm going to have later with my weight in it. Like, it just doesn't feel good. So for me, as a recovered person, it's usually like a red light, like there's something else going on. Is there a resentment? Is there some fear? Are you having hungry, angry, lonely, tired? I will say for me, I cannot do naps in the afternoon, because when I wake up, I'm ravenous. And if I wake up at 4 and dinner's not for a couple hours, I really struggle. Not that I take a lot of naps, but we get more information as we live this program. And I don't know if that resonates, but just keep coming back and keep talking about it. You're not the only one. Oh my goodness, you are not the only one. Keep coming back. That's all.
Thanks, Michelle. Okay, Gloria, it's your turn, followed by Dara. Good morning, Gloria.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Becca, for your openness and honesty. And my question is, we touched on this, and maybe you explained it, but I might have missed it because I have a bad memory too. But you said, when the food got quiet, finally the food got quiet, and I had a quietness for like 6.5 months, and I lost it person. So I kind of wonder now, do you still have moments when it chatters and talks to you, and how do you calm that and quiet that again? Thank you.
Yeah. To answer the second part of your question, yes, it still gets loud. And I'm grateful for having the practice of the pause and the tools to go to instead of immediately going to seek relief in the food. And so that quiet for me comes from the daily exercises of the practice, of having that morning time, of connecting with my fellows, connecting with my higher power, seeing what I can bring to the situation instead of from the situation. My hashtag is zoom out, because I can get so magnified on my problems and what's going on in my world and my hula hoop. And if I can just zoom that lens out a little bit, it just changes my perspective. And I do that a lot with outreach calls. So I don't know if that helps, but that's just what came to mind.
Thanks, Gloria. Okay, Dara, it's your turn with the question, and we'll open it up for more if you have a question for Becca. Dara, good morning.
Hi, this is Dara F. in Virginia, and I was wondering if you wouldn't mind giving a little more information about how you went through the steps differently the second time around after your relapse from the first time. Thank you.
That's a great question. Yeah, so it's been a while, and I told you I have a terrible memory, but both my sponsors I worked with had different approaches. They had different material, different writing assignments, different things to listen to, different suggestions. My first sponsor, you know, just based on where she was in her program, and she transmitted what she had, and my current sponsor transmitted what she has, and I think the work is the same. The steps are the same. I did pray for a new experience. And I know relapse is so common with this disease. And I'm grateful that we have so many different experiences. Because when I came back, having never actually left, that was my prayer. God, give me a new experience, so that I can have a new experience with you, with the steps, with recovery. And that's what happened. And I believe, for me, that will continue to happen, because what I've noticed in my recovery in the 12 steps and other programs is that it will give about 2 years, I'll have this like turn, like, let's go deeper with something. Let's start working on this. I've sought some outside help in the last couple of years to go back and to look at some childhood stuff that I didn't think was a problem. But my first sponsor, one of her favorite cases was "More Will Be Revealed." And it has been, and I just continue to look around. I'm always invested what other people are doing. You know, what meetings are you going to? What are you listening to? What spiritual reading are you in? Recently, I heard a fellow share about reading the stories in the back of the book. And so in my prayer and my reading time in the last few weeks, I've been reading stories in the back of the book. And it's funny how they'll come up in my outreach calls. And, you know, someone will say something, and I'll say, hey, I just read in this story. Have you, you know, and it's just, just being open to that and open to what is ahead. You know, I hope to have even more new experiences with the steps and with recovery. I think I said I've become rather interested in the service aspect of how this thing works. And, I'm feeling like God might be leading me into learning more about that, gathering more information about that. That's all I've got.
Thanks, Dara. Okay, so we have time. We paid Becca the usual fee of immunity for another few minutes here. So if you got a question for Dara, press star one. Who else has a question?
This is Hanayeta.
Okay, Hanayeta. Anyone else?
Claire in the UK.
Claire. Who else?
Liz O in Maryland.
Liz. Gotcha. Anybody else? You'll be funding Becca's immunity today. Okay, we'll start with, we have Hanayeta, Claire, and Liz. So let's go with that. Hanayeta, you're first up, followed by Claire. Good morning.
Thank you, Larry, for your service. Becca. You were wonderful. Your voice was perfect at the beginning and the end. It was such a pleasure to listen to you. So my question for you is, how much time do you spend with your children and giving them what they need along with your program? Because I know, as being now, my children are 50 and 51, how it affected them, and I wanted to know how you keep that in balance.
Well, that's a great question. And the short answer is I don't. I don't keep it in balance, but I definitely work towards that. Like I said, I take a lot of time for program because it somehow magnifies the time of being really present with them. I look and read and do a lot of program at bedtime. I've got two little boys, one's 6 and one's 3, and my husband and I alternate putting them to bed, and it's usually this routine last 20, 25 minutes. And I use that time. I've got grapevines and lifelines and readings on my phone. I'll often do my nightly review because my boys want us to stay in there until they fall asleep. So, and then I really try to be intentional with all three of my kids. With the age difference between my 6 and 14-year-old, I sometimes feel like I'm serving my younger boys so much more than my very independent teenage daughter. But just to be able to show up, and I think more than anything, OA has showed me that it doesn't have to be like this big presentation. And again, going back to my perfectionism, everything needs to be amazing and grand and the best ever. And what I've learned with the connection to my higher power and to my fellows is like it can just be these little pockets of time. It doesn't have to be grand. But these little pockets of time can be more rich than the hours of time that I could have spent with them before. And I'm sure if you know, like when you just have those experiences and I guess my perfectionism just always said it needed to be big and grand. And I'm always amazed when I make an outreach call and I'm busy. I'm a busy mom. Like, I've got 5 minutes. Can I give you a 10-step real quick on this fear? And it's like those 5 minutes can completely change the trajectory of my day. Just finding pockets and being okay with small pieces. And I love being a mom. I just adore being a mom. But it is also one of the things that brings me to my knees with program. Like, God, help me. And I will say my youngest now is 3, and we're kind of entering this new stage of much more independence. The 3 and 6-year-old play together better. But yeah, I was so checked out with the food, and you guys, I'm sure, can relate, just unavailable emotionally to anyone, to my husband, to my friends, my fellows, my kids, just to be present, have that quiet, that peace of mind, that rat cage of stillness, it's such a gift to them. I hope that helps.
Thanks for the question, Hanayeta. Okay, Claire, across the pond, that's where it's 9 degrees Celsius. But it only feels like 7.
Good
morning.
Morning, Larry, and thank you so much, Becca, for your share. Again, another shout out from Mum's Group. It's been an amazing asset to me talking to other parents in recovery. My question has been, well, I've had to revise my question several times because other people have asked similar, but I'm going to come back to this perfectionism. And I too have 3 kids, and I work, and I have a husband, and I have recovery, and I have various other commitments. And it's very, very easy to get into a state of beating myself up for not being better at managing it. And so just a little bit more maybe to how you have started, or how do you surrender it to God in the mornings? How do you take direction as to what to do in your day? How do you learn to pause? How do you learn to go easy on yourself when you do get it wrong? It'd be really useful to have a little bit more about that maybe. Thank you.
Oh, thanks, Claire. That's a great question. And I just keep coming back. Like, I think I said that to someone else in a different sense, but just keep coming back. Like, I know the solution is here. I know the tools are like the bumpers of my bowling alley, you know, when I can have these boundaries, but I'm still going to bounce around falling into that belief that I'm not doing enough, that I'm not sponsoring enough. I'm not sponsoring right. I'm not parenting right. I'm not, you know, they just had dress up week at my kids' school. And I talk about feeling inferior every single day. I missed it. The kids are like, everybody was dressed up as Dr. Seuss. Why weren't we dressed up as Dr. Seuss? So I can fall prey to that so quickly. But again, it's that, am I doing my tools? Do I keep coming back? Am I getting that morning time? Because I can zoom out, take that lens and zoom out and see, like, it's not that big a deal. You know, my kids didn't have the Dr. Seuss outfits, but they had a mom who prayed that morning, which, you know, has this ripple effect of goodness for our home. And that's a gift of God. My oldest will sometimes look at me and she'll expect a reaction. And when I don't react, she'll wink at me and say, "You must have prayed extra this morning, Mom." And she's right. I did. I hope it helps. Thanks.
Thanks, Claire. Okay, Liz, you're up. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks, Becca, for your share. My question is, you talked about 11th step in the morning, you know, and taking that time in the morning, and then it sounded like in the evening, taking time to connect with your nightly review. I'm curious what it looks like to have conscious contact throughout the day for you. Thanks.
Yeah. So, yeah, in the morning with my prayer, my meditation, sometimes I'll do the two-way prayer, especially if I'm having it, like if there's something big that I'm waking up with. I don't know about anybody else on the line, but very often I'll go to bed and do that nightly review, and I'm tired. And so my initial, were you resentful? Yeah, I'm usually very resentful at bedtime. But what I found is in the morning, if it's still lingering, 9 times out of the 10, it's a night's sleep. Makes it go away. But if it's still there in the morning, then I'll do a 10th step on it then. If it's really inflamed, I will do some two-way prayer as part of my 10th step and in the section of we ask God to remove the fear. And, you know, that's where I'll write, you know, "Hey, God, it's me, Becca, and here I am in fear. I don't know what to do." And that connection of just like bringing me back to the present, which so often fear is like me being in the future and it's not reality. It's not happened. I think I know how it's going to happen. And so it just brings me into like my body being present. Some of the outside help I did in the last year has really focused on being like connected to my body. I don't know if it's it's my compulsive overeating, but I do feel like I have this disconnect from my head and my body. And so I'm exploring that, just how to really feel present in the moment and to be in today. And again, just going back to the tools of, you know, can I write about it? Is it something I can write about? Can I call someone? Can I talk to a fellow? If it's really important, I'll reach out to my sponsor. You know, sometimes I'll pick up a lifeline, or I'll pick up my big book, or I'll pick up my journal, and just, you know, just some kind of connection to bring me back into the present. And I constantly live in the future. And so that's my biggest thing, is coming back to what's real today, right now. I do some meditations. It's pretty common, but just, you know, 5 things I see, 4 things I hear, 3 things I can touch, 2 things I can smell. And just kind of, yeah, it kind of brings me back into my body and the reality of now. I'm a worrier. My default is fear, and usually of the future. And it's just such a time thief, just like the compulsion with food and the obsession with food was a time thief. This disease can still steal my time and in entire abstinence, because I'm so afraid of what the future is going to be. Are my kids going to turn out okay? What's this going to look like in 10 years? Is the end of our story going to be a happy one? You know, and so when I can just come back to what's going on today, being in the reality of today, and very often it's, I look at my kids and they're usually dirty and snotty, and but they're happy. And I get so afraid of, you know, them facing struggle and what their futures are going to look like. And I had just a beautiful outreach call the other morning with a fellow in OA, and she just reminded me, my kids have a higher power, and it ain't me. So just the more I can do my program, yeah, I just do my program. When I don't know what to do, recover, 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 a fellow says, and just try to focus on my recovery. I can get really codependent and easily turn my focus onto other people, whether it's my kids or my sponsees or my husband. And yeah, if I can just come back to me and what can I do today? And usually getting out of self is a good place to start. That's all I've got.
Becca, thanks so much. We're gonna wrap it up here, but you did give me a motto for today anyway. Dirty, snotty, but by golly, I'm happy. So thank you so much, Becca. We're so appreciative of your authenticity, your clarity, your vulnerability, all that stuff just made for a good morning for us. So thank you for your generosity. And let me give you the, once the recorded hour is over, we'll get Becca's contact information, and you can reach out to her if you have a question for her. The share ID number again for this session this morning is 22,255. That's 22255. So we are going to close now from page 164, which I will read, and then we'll move on from there, and we'll give you some information on the convention again as well. We'll get Becca's contact information. Page 164, our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you could do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until